Welcome to the CCTA Wake Up Call Show. Thank you for joining us. We're glad you can be with us. I'm just going to give you a quick opening here that coming up on May 22nd, we will be doing Back the Blue at Stanley Hall. We're going to open, we're going to be there at 6 o'clock in the evening. We're going to honor representatives from Craven, Carteret, and Pamlico Sheriff's Offices, and also New Bern and Havelock Police Departments. We're going to take an opportunity to do that. We're not doing a banquet this year.
There will be light refreshments.
There'll be light refreshments. My name is Bob Griswold.
Mary Griswold.
Alan Harrop.
Pat Park.
Kim Fink.
Glenn Fink.
Well, welcome, everybody. So we wanted to start off with, now here we are on Wednesday, we're recording it, and we have had the turncoat again, once again.
Tom Tillis.
The turncoat, yes. What did he do?
He blocked the nomination of Ed Martin from coming out of committee. And because of that, the role of the U.S. District Attorney is up for grabs. And unfortunately, one of the things that may happen is that good old Judge Boasberg may get to a point who would be the U.S. attorney for D.C.
Why?
I don't understand how that works, but that's I'm reading says.
My understanding is the process is if the Senate cannot confirm someone by a certain period of time, that the district judge, I guess it's Boasberg in this case, is authorized to appoint somebody. Now, that might just be a temporary appointment. That may not be until the Senate gets off their duff and comes up and appoints.
You're polite.
My understanding.
So there's still time for another conservative to be vetted for that position. It's just not automatically going
I think they got about another 30 days.
Okay.
And why was he opposed to Ed Martin?
It had something to do with January 6th. Tom Tillis has come out very strongly against anyone who was anywhere near the Capitol building on January 6th.
Are we referring to the January 6th people who have yet to have their due process?
Well, not only that, how many January 6th people were ushered into the building by the police, kept between the ropes, and behaved very well, and did nothing but walk through the building from one end to the other?
Well, there was a total, my understanding, it was total like 1,300 people who were identified as being on that site that actually were under indictment. Now, whether they were prosecuted, I don't know. But Tillis's opposition to Martin had to do with Martin was defending some of these people who had the charges as a defense attorney, I guess.
And Tillis approved of Mayor Garland, so I wouldn't trust anything Tillis is going to do.
Yeah. Just a personal story about Tillis. This was a couple of years ago. There was an issue that came up about illegal immigration, and his stance was very, very weak against it. And I called one of his district officers, I think the one down in Charlotte. And I spoke to one of the staff members, and I told him at that time I was the chairman of the precinct in Fairfield Harbor, and I had kind of done a little survey, and it was like 95% of the people did not approve of Tillis' stand, okay? Because it's conservative groups. But anyway, so when I called the staff, I mentioned that. I said, well, you know, I did the survey, and, you know, 95% of the people are opposed to that. The response I got from a staff member was, well, Senator Tillis does what he thinks is right, and he does not kowtow to his constituents. So that told me all I needed to hear, that he's up there doing his own thing, and where he's not representing North Carolina, not North Carolina conservative Republicans, that's for sure.
Well, we had some CCT issues that we were making phone calls on, and I made a phone call to Tillis' office and gave my opinion on whatever the topic was. And I was told that our group was not part of the constituency that they were looking at in that particular interest. And I asked what the constituency was, and they said the Chamber of Commerce. and it had to do with an agricultural issue at the time.
Right.
So part, and it was with the illegals, and it had to do with some of the agriculture businesses and the seafood businesses that were bringing in the illegals. So Tillis was basically saying, your $5 isn't going to compete with the dollars I'm getting from these other lobbying groups.
Yeah.
Which tend to be left-leaning in my experience.
Oh, yeah. Even, well, their own personal, their own financial interest, not the best interest of the country.
And so we're all aware that he is bought and paid for.
Right. Well, and that was very enlightening to realize that we are not, he is not, and I would venture to say many of the politicians are not representing we the people. They are representing he who pays the most.
Well, there was a meme running around Facebook a while ago. Why can't we put patches on our senators like the patches they have on NASCAR drivers so we'll know who sponsors them?
Oh, yeah. Well, today on Facebook, I saw a Doge thing that showed some of the senators that they would like to see audited with Doge this month. And they included people who went into office. Hakeem Jeffries was one of them that I remember. And it was how he was like $40,000 in debt when he went into office and how he's worth millions and millions now. And
and that's not party specific. That's across the board. Yeah.
Right, right. There were, but that was just the one I can remember right now. Mm-hmm. But I know
Congress has a much higher percentage of millionaires than the American public does.
And based on their salaries, there's no way they did that.
Well, and we need to say, we need to add, they're congressionally made millionaires. They are not made by doing something private industry that's productive to the economy.
Well, my bubble was broken when, occasionally I supported some of the things that Joe Manchin did. And Joe Manchin has an $800,000 houseboat that he lives on when he's in Washington, and he drives a Maserati. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, you make tops $175,000 a year. How are you doing that?
Insider trading. Probably.
Maybe he and Nancy have the same stockbroker.
They get information
Somebody did start a stock company that is going to be watching Congress's trades and putting out the tips to the public.
But we might all be millionaires.
Yeah, but see, that's counterproductive because they will drive the price up and they will get in later.
Yeah, the price will go down.
I totally disagree with
that. But I thought it was an interesting idea.
It only helps them.
I thought it was an interesting idea.
But, you see some of this, what's going on, I think, with these politicians get in office. They want to stay in office, obviously. It takes so much money nowadays to run a campaign. So, I'm not saying that this is the right thing to do, but they are selling themselves out to get that. I mean, look, what did they spend, built these millions and millions of dollars for a congressional race?
Okay, their war chest. That's not their houses and their cars.
I'm not saying, I'm getting back to why politicians don't represent their constituents, and they represent the big donors because it takes so much money nowadays to run for office.
You with the most money wins.
It's interesting to go back to the North Carolina Senator Jesse Helms, and Jesse Helms rightly said, "You may not agree with me, but you'll always know where I stand."
Yeah.
And we wish that would happen now.
Yeah, I think we had that with Michael Speciale as well.
Yes.
He always knew where he stood.
Where are we going to go next? I think we said we wanted to go
NPR?
No, the Supreme Court election.
Supreme Court.
The federal judge has ordered the North Carolina Supreme Court to go ahead and certify the election for Riggs. Isn't that her name, Patricia Riggs?
Yes.
You said the North Carolina Supreme Court. Did you mean the Board of Elections?
Yes, I did.
Okay.
Because
that sounds like you're telling your superior what to do.
This is the federal court.
Oh, federal court.
The state court.
Oh.
To go ahead and certify it.
It wasn't a federal court. It was a district court, which I guess is federal. But I would assume there's still an appeal to be made to a Supreme Court if this is a district court.
Well. Yeah, the order can be appealed, but he's conceded.
Okay. I did not know that.
Yes, he has conceded.
Yes.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, well, that's probably a good thing. He was starting to get a lot of more negative press.
Yes.
Well, you know, one of the oddities, let's compare the illegals versus that election. Okay, and pardon my thought process, but on the illegals, these are folks that illegally entered the country. And now there is all of the lawsuits that say we need to give them a fair hearing before they leave the country. Okay, we need to give them a
court, due process
before they're leaving the country. Now, turning to this election, here are ballots that were illegal ballots by the voting standards of what you needed for an ID or whatever else. But we can't disqualify those ballots. We can't have a hearing on disqualifying those ballots. So in the immigrant, my mindset, the immigrants came in legally, but we have to give them due process to leave. Here, the votes came in. Well, I'm going by all of the courts. I agree, but all of the courts are saying that. I hope it's all overturned. And here in the voting process, there are votes that came in illegally, but we're not going to disqualify them.
Well, the federal court said you can't change the rules. You can't change them now that the election is over. In other words, different rules for counting them. You know, if they let in illegal ballots, you're stuck with them.
But they
shouldn't have let them in to begin with.
And, yeah, and that was the point. There were complaints filed before the election about
those. I'm not defending anything. I'm just saying that's what the court said.
That's right. And folks were into areas where we're glazing the eyes over as we talk about this.
We need to go
process.
Back to voting in person and stop, well, most, if not all, of this mail-in voting crap.
And when an illegal when a ballot comes in that is not filled out properly, it needs to be cured at the time or not cured at all.
This was at the registration stage, though. You know, so it was a registration issue. They didn't have their Social Security number at the point of registering, so they shouldn't have even been allowed to get a ballot.
Yes, exactly.
That's the whole process.
And they couldn't prove they were residents of North Carolina.
Ever.
That's what went on there.
And that, that wishy-washy.
They should have enforced the voting rules in place.
Exactly.
That were already there.
And it was our North Carolina left-leaning Board of Election
right.
that caused that.
And I think as the auditor is now taking over that Board of Elections, I hope that things will improve there in
is
the process.
He?
Well, that's going to be
that's still in court.
It's in the Supreme Court. It's been appealed to the Supreme Court.
Okay.
Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. We may have glazed your eyes over, but we'll be back. This is CCTA Wake Up Call.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
Just who are these people doing this CCTA program? They're people like you, just people in the community that love this country to protect individual liberty and to preserve the U.S. Constitution and free enterprise system. To learn more, go to cctaxpayers.com. That's cctaxpayers.com. Join Coastal Carolina Taxpayers Association and make your voice heard.
Welcome back. And again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. We're going to head off in a different direction. Alan, you wanted to take us down a
different
direction.
Yeah, I just wanted to follow up something that Trump did recently, which I was very glad to hear. And that is he has announced that the federal funding for PBS and NPR will be terminated. And, of course, like everything else, going to go through the courts, I guess. But anyway, and that's a wonderful thing for a couple of reasons. Number one is, first of all, I don't believe the government should be sponsoring any media platform. That's generally what I think. You know, it's kind of like they do in these autocratic countries like Russia with Pravda and so on and so forth. I don't think that's a good idea. And we have enough free market support in this country where we can have media stations and so on that are supported by their constituents, which is, I think, the way it should
yeah,
be.
Yeah, and don't forget that USAID was supporting media, yeah. Including BBC.
And Politico and a lot of alternative media even.
The other issue about the NPR is the fact that I believe it was in the, when the Congress held an inquiry about the committee hearings about a month and a, month and a half, 2 months ago or whatever. And they were interviewing the lady who was the head of NPR. And she admitted that, I believe it was 87% of the staff on NPR are registered Democrats.
I thought it was the higher other than that.
Well, there's 87%. There's unaffiliated, too.
13% were unaffiliated, or they couldn't identify what they were. There was no verified Republican staff member in the entire organization from what they were able to determine. So, again, all you're getting is a biased left-wing, left-leaning group, and the government shouldn't be doing that, shouldn't be supporting one side or the other.
I don't think I'm ever going to forget what NPR did with the Biden laptop.
Yeah.
They refused to cover it. They said, we're not going to waste our time. This is a non-story.
Yeah.
That was flabbergasting. You had the actual laptop. You had access to the emails, and they wouldn't even cover it.
And here's something I've noticed. I've done a lot of traveling with my RV over the years. And I guarantee you can go any place in any state, and you can get NPR. I don't know why that's the case. Well, maybe they have so much money they can broadcast a signal. You know, it's different stations, but it's almost impossible to not find them. So they do have a great coverage of the country. So,
you know, I'm going to go back a number of years, and I believe former Vice President Al Gore had his own show on Al Jazeera Network.
Yeah.
And it was the greatest use of blank airspace. There was nothing... nothing usable on the air during that show. And I know Al Jazeera finally folded up, but it was a...
I think Al Gore had a show that he sold to Al Jazeera.
Yeah, and as far as I know, any of the left-leaners on that show, on that network, were not successful.
Well, remember when the left, during the era of Rush Limbaugh, was trying to start a left-leaning talk show, and they got nowhere. And the problem is that because the media has been so slanted left for so long, that the left hasn't had to defend its positions. It hasn't had to debate them. And the conservatives have been, you know, fighting so long to have their voices heard that they've had to come up with rational arguments. The left doesn't need a rational argument. They never have. And now when they're being asked to give one, it's sort of like, you know, it just doesn't work.
It's not blah, 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 blah. It's Nazi, fascist, racist, bigot, homophobe.
Yeah.
They just call you a name, and that's their argument
for
everything.
Unfortunately,
they threaten you with violence.
That's what the political debate on the political left has become. Name-calling, and I mean, it's really kind of sad because there was a time in this country when we used to be able to have rational discussions with people about what they believed and why they believed it.
I find it interesting that when you're having a discussion that it turns personal so quickly, and it's not about the policy that you're talking about, it's about the person. And recently I was having a discussion with a person, and I said something about the Doge and the money, and then it was all of a sudden it was, well, why isn't your president doing blah blah blah?
Your president.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
Yeah. So all of a sudden it was my responsibility and my problem, and I find that over and over, and I It surprises me that people who you can be really good friends with, their hate for Trump is greater than the policy that will benefit everybody. And even especially with the Doge, when we're trying to save the taxpayer, the working man dollars, but people are complaining about those who are losing their jobs. It's crazy. Nobody seemed to care when those of us in the manufacturing industry lost our jobs.
I'll just say the stats for the last month, it was like 17,000 federal workers lost their job, and it was like 36,000 for the year. And I believe that's accurate. It's in those two ranges. So there's been a lot of discussion about all these layoffs, but it hasn't hit the labor numbers, you know? So I just don't know.
How many people are really executed? Because they're still getting their pay. They haven't had to go out and find a job yet.
And how many people in private industry lost their jobs during COVID?
Right.
Is anybody thinking about that? How many people in private industry deal with the uncertainties of the market every day?
Right.
You know, and here's an interesting idea or interesting fact. Is that the job numbers? They do the new job report every month, the number of jobs. The last month, it went up, okay? And the interesting thing about it was the numbers that went, a lot of the numbers that increased were due to increased manufacturing hires in this country.
Yep,
during the Democrat administration, during the Biden administration, most of the increase in hires were federal employees.
Yes.
They were expanding the federal government.
Right.
And that has nothing to do with building wealth in the country. In fact, it does the opposite.
Yeah.
It reduces the wealth of the country. So the Democrats come in and they put more people on the payroll for the government. And Trump comes in and he says, no, we're not going to do that. We're going to bolster manufacturing, and we're going to hire manufacturing workers, and we're going to increase the wealth of this country.
Two things about that. Every dollar that goes into the government payroll is a dollar taken out of the private payroll. Second of all, the figure that I watch is the workforce participation rate. That has been holding steady. It went down because of COVID, and it is now starting to climb up because, again, we're creating jobs.
Well, Mike Rowe talks about workforce participation all the time because there are so many jobs that don't require college degrees that are open and unfilled, and he's always advocating for youngsters to go find those jobs, go to tech school. Go learn how to weld. Go learn how to dig ditches. Do those dirty jobs. In fact, he had a show called Dirty Jobs, didn't he?
Yes.
It was the old show.
And I read today that there was a 16-year-old in some kind of shop class, and he was getting $70,000 a year job offers.
Yeah.
He's still in high school.
And I remember when I was in high school, they had a shop class.
Right.
They don't have it anymore in most high schools.
Industrial arts, right?
Yeah. Well, whatever they called it. But the point is, we don't need 95% of people being college graduates with these degrees like what? Social engineering or whatever they call all this.
Well, social butterflying.
Gender studies.
Yeah, gender studies, all that nonsense.
All that DEI nonsense.
Well, if we bring industrial manufacturing back, like is the agenda, the wages will continue to go up for those areas because they're going to be needed, and they're already pretty good for those that have gotten those skills, but it'll attract more, and that'll get dealt with. It's going to be good if we're successful.
It's the same thing he did in his first term, and then Biden undid it all. So we're just covering the same ground again, and we're going to have the same result. It's going to be a booming economy.
For the short term, it's going to be a booming economy. Yeah.
Well, the problem is if some of this stuff doesn't get enacted into law rather than being executive orders. If we have a Democrat president next time, all of the prosperity is going to be undone.
And I sense there's already an effort to get that, get what they can through Congress.
Yeah.
And they must. I agree with that 100%.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Alan, you wanted to take us in a different direction. You were talking about private schools and...
Recently, the North Carolina House, this has not become...
not law yet.
Hasn't been passed by the Senate yet. But the North Carolina House, led, of course, by our very outspoken, very conservative Keith Kidwell. He was part of the group. They basically are going to allow private schools to authorize their properly trained teachers and staff to carry concealed firearms. Now, why are they doing that? Well, one reason is they don't get these SROs, these special, what do they call them? What's SROs now?
Anyway, resource officers.
They never say what it's for. You know, a resource officer. They're actually protection. Protection for the students. So this bill would allow that to happen. But the interesting thing that came out of the discussion of it, and I'm just going to quote this. I haven't verified it myself, but it was quoted in the press. The SROs in the schools are required, and I hope you're sitting down when I say this, they're required to have 868 hours of training.
Oh, please.
860 hours of training. I don't know of any skill or whatever that takes. You could train a brain surgeon for 868 hours.
It's only 124 hours to get a college degree.
You know, but the average work year is 2,000 hours.
Yeah, and I think the reason they brought that up, the people were opposing it, saying, well, these people that they're going to hire aren't going to have all that training. I personally would like to see that extended to public schools. After the break, I'd like to follow up my rationale for why I think that needs to happen.
Very good. Folks, we're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, this is CCTA Wake Up Call.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
Since 1952, the North Carolina Fisheries Association has been working to ensure access for fishermen and consumers to enjoy fresh local seafood. The North Carolina Fisheries Association is for fair, science-based fisheries management for commercial and recreational fishermen. If you agree with this philosophy, become a member. For more information, log on to ncfish.org. For fresh North Carolina seafood, there's no better place than B&J Seafood, Highway 70 East in New Bern.
The County Compass is a rapidly growing, free weekly newspaper throughout eastern North Carolina. At the County Compass, we believe small business is the future of our great nation. Many small business owners have discovered that an ad in the County Compass each week is the most effective, the most affordable way to reach thousands of readers from all walks of life. At the County Compass, we focus entirely on local and regional news, coverage of important issues that directly affect your life. At the County Compass, we love our readers, and we love our advertisers. this Thursday and every Thursday at more than 750 distribution points throughout Eastern North Carolina. Pick up your free copy of the County Compass newspaper.
Coming up on May 22nd, we will be doing Back the Blue at Stanley Hall. We're going to open, we're going to be there at 6 o'clock in the evening. We're going to honor representatives from Craven, Carteret, and Pamlico Sheriff's Offices, and also New Bern and Havelock Police Departments. We're going to take an opportunity to do that. We're not doing a banquet this year.
There will be light refreshments.
Welcome back again. Thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. Now, where did we wanted to go into the helicopters?
No, not yet. I have some.
Oh yeah, you want
to follow up on the school arming the teachers in the private schools. Just have a comment about that. I have been a proponent for a couple of years, ever since the incident in Florida, and school shooting, and the one in Texas. I've been a proponent of the notion that school teachers and staff, again, properly trained and familiar with firearms, should be allowed to carry concealed firearms. A couple of reasons. Number one is shooters typically select places where their firearms are not permitted because they feel comfortable in there. That's the first thing. Second thing is, psychologically, there's a tremendous difference between a person who is in a situation where they're under direct threat as compared to a situation where there's a direct threat going on and you're asked to go into that, to put yourself in that danger. And that's part of the problem they've had with these SRO officers in certain places. It's clear that they did not pursue the do what they should have been, they were expected to do in terms of putting themselves in a position to protect the children. That's the second factor. And, you know, it's just to, the third factor, and I think this is a pretty big factor. I think a lot of the law enforcement, the heads of law enforcement, they prefer having SROs. They prefer having people that they train and are, I guess, semi-reportable or reportable to them. I don't know. I guess there is a relationship between who controls the SRO officer. I guess maybe it's the local sheriff.
They're still in the department.
Yeah, they're still in the sheriff's department. So therefore, they have a bias, I think, of maintaining what they've done and so on. But I really think that, you know, this step, if it does get passed, that the private schools can allow teachers and staff, I don't see why it can't be extended to the public schools. It would only enhance the safety for the students.
And again, David Hogg, that made his name after that Stone Ridge, he's now the vice chair of the DNC. He was on a talk show on CNN or MSNBC. And he said, he was talking about democracy, and he says, democracy is what has made us go through school shooter drills.
Right.
Well, I think
does that blow your mind?
I think the Democrats regret putting him in that position. I truly do, because he's not necessarily a team player.
He's an embarrassment.
But statistically, where concealed carry and open, even, I'm not talking about schools, I'm talking about the general public, where concealed carry and open carry are part of the culture, you have less mass shootings because somebody in a shooting in a mall who wants to shoot up the place knows that there is a very good possibility that somebody in that mall is armed and he's going to get shot himself before he gets too far.
But if you go into a movie theater where they are posted no concealed carry, it's a soft target.
Yes, it
is. Just like the schools are. But what I wanted to say about the guns in the school is, if a teacher is armed and an assailant comes into that room, there is less opportunity for more students to be hurt. Same thing with the office staff. One of the shootings occurred because they shot through the glass at the entrance of the school and gained access and then shot school employees. If the people at the front desk are armed, they're not getting into the school in the first place.
You mean the old ladies that work the desk?
I have a concealed carry, and
we do. We do know. We do know some of those old ladies that have concealed carries, and yep. And now again, we're talking about people that will voluntarily carry,
correct?
Not people
and
that
trained,
are forced
specifically
and trained.
Trained.
Not people that are forced to carry, because that's the opposite. Go back to Constantine, decided to make everybody a Christian, only because he knew that was the way he could continue to rule. Go ahead.
In one of the school shootings, there was also controversy about the SROs on site. When they called in the active shooters, they were told to stand down and wait for backup.
That was in Texas. That's
and
correct.
So it, there that's again, true. The students in the school are at more risk while they're waiting for backup.
And that shooter was shooting students when that was going on. There were sounds of gunfire in the classroom. You know, and the thing is, it's just like the left does with a lot of things, like the Inflation Reduction Act. They misname these things. It's not a school resource officer. What does that mean? Resource? What resource?
I would have said librarian would have been a resource officer.
How about SPO, school protection officer?
Or police officer.
Even police officer. So let's name things what they are, but the left never does that. They try to confuse and mystify people what the hell they're talking about.
One of the things, moving down here from Massachusetts, there were a few culture shocks in regard to guns. And one of them was I was sitting at a meeting, and they were auctioning off a rifle or a gun to raise money for the organization. And I hadn't been here very long, and I almost fell out of my chair. And I said to the woman next to me, wow, this would never happen in Massachusetts. And she very quietly unzipped her handbag and showed me her gun. And she was in her 60s, and she had concealed carry, and she was carrying. And I thought, okay, this is a very different world than what we lived in. In Massachusetts.
You're not in Kansas anymore, sweetie.
Yeah. But on the other hand, if you have been trained and if you have a concealed carry permit, you have to take a course and you have to have some training. It's not a bad idea.
You know, I'm going along with the training. Now, if you do have concealed carry and you do not continue to practice, don't carry. You need to continue to be practiced, continue to be proficient in that. Just like my instructor, yes, I'm concealed carry, but my instructor said, if you don't normally carry and you decide you're going to go someplace where you have to carry, he says, don't go there.
Yeah, heard that.
Yeah, I have heard
and
that.
And the thing is that the schools, let's say, for example, public school had, you know, 4 or 5, maybe 10 staff that were interested in carrying concealed, they could facilitate that training.
Additionally,
giving them additional time off or something to make sure that the familiarization took place, but not talking about 868 hours of training that the school.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
One of the big arguments against the concealed carry by admin or teachers was the possibility of being overrun by students, that the teacher could be accosted themselves and have their weapon removed. And that does concern me, but I think a workaround that would be a biometric or a facial recognition or a biometric finger safe that the teacher could access. That way, no student would ever have the opportunity to remove the gun from the teacher.
Yeah, but you got to have the gun on you at all times.
Also,
having to go to a separate location to retrieve the weapon defeats part of the ability to respond immediately.
I'm thinking about the phones that
but
we used
kids.
To have in our classrooms that were right behind the teacher's desk. I don't see that as a...
It might work. I'm not saying
the kids shouldn't know who's armed. The kids should not know who was armed.
I agree with that, but how many times are we hearing, even recently, we're hearing about teachers even in Wake County being accosted by their students?
I know, but I'm saying if somebody's coming into a school with bad things on their mind, if they don't know who's armed and who's not.
I'm talking about one of the students with the bad things on the mind, because how many of the last school shootings have been students?
That's true.
So I'm talking about the student being the bad guy.
Well, how many students have beaten up the teachers?
A lot.
because the teacher took their phone or
a lot
dared to say something about their behavior. And
a lot.
I know.
Well, maybe if the teachers were armed, it wouldn't happen so frequently.
And, you know, it's interesting to that point. I think one of the other pieces of legislation working through our legislature right now is that we are going to prevent phones in the classroom.
Yeah, I hope so.
And students may not like that, but guess what? You're students.
And part of it's not just the students don't like it. Some of the parents don't like it. They want to be able to contact their child at all times. And we grew up, our parents weren't able to contact us. We survived. I mean, the technology now has just created this environment.
Yeah, dependency.
Everybody's got to communicate with everybody immediately. And
they call them helicopter parents.
Yeah, exactly.
They're hovering.
Hovering, right. There you go. Hovering parents.
What else do we have to add to that?
Weight Watchers is going bankrupt.
What?
Yeah. I saw that this morning.
I thought Oprah owned them.
No.
No, she did ads for them, but she never owned them.
She used to do Weight Watchers.
Now, why
now everybody does Ozempic or Mounjaro and Wegovy.
And some of those things have not been totally proven safe. Some of them have pretty heavy side effects.
Yeah, they're talking about the side effects on the face because one of the first places to get drawn out is your face.
Yeah.
When you lose that, so all of a sudden you have a very, very different face and a huge set of lips.
You want to talk about the helicopter issue?
We do want to talk about the helicopter issues.
Yes.
All right, helicopter issue. Of course, what was it, 6 weeks ago or so, we had a tragic incident in Washington where a Black Hawk military helicopter crashed into a passenger jet that was in the process of, I believe, landing.
Yes.
And there were like 67 people killed. And people raised the question, what are these helicopters doing, you know, around this area where the planes are coming in and out?
VIPs.
So, yeah, you would think that after that incident, they would have stopped it. But then, what was it, a couple of days ago, they had another Black Hawk helicopter that was supposedly carrying some military generals or something, taking them on a tour.
Yeah, VIP tour.
Yeah, VIP tour. So one of the transportation, I heard the Department of Transportation secretary today said, he was interviewed, and he said they should ride in vehicles just like everybody else, these generals. They shouldn't have a right to be flown around Washington. Let them get in the traffic like everybody else. I agree with that.
Yeah, I do also. Folks, we're going to take another quick break to hear from our sponsors and supporters. Again, CCTA Wake Up Call. Thank you for listening.
What's the largest gun shop in Craven County? If you said East 70 Pond, you are correct. Since Drew got back from the most recent gun show, new guns have been pouring in faster than they can open the boxes. The large showroom at East 70 Pond, slam bam, full of firearms. New guns and used guns, long guns and handguns. You will find weapons for self-defense, hunting, target shooting, and collectibles. The team at East 70 Pond is friendly, courteous, and knowledgeable, especially in the area of guns. If East 70 Pond doesn't have the gun you are looking for, they'll try to find it. If you want to do a gun transfer, East 70 Pond will help you do it right. If you are looking to buy, sell, or trade a gun, there's no better place to do it than East 70 Pond. Of course, East 70 has tools, electronics, trolling motors, and a great selection of jewelry. But their specialty is guns. And we're talking hundreds of guns. Come see for yourself. East 70 Pond, across from Craven County Fairgrounds, New Bern.
Other restaurants claim their food is fresh and fast, but are they friendly? At Moore's, you're treated like family the minute you walk into their doors. With locations in Winterville, New Bern, Swansboro, Moorhead City, and Jacksonville, we've been practicing what we preach since 1945. At Moore's, our barbecue is slow-cooked and smoked over real wood daily until it's so tender it's falling off the bone. Combined with our fresh chicken, cooked-to-order seafood, and homemade fixins, we're sure you'll agree. If it's not Moore's, it's less.
At Professional Auto Service, keeping vehicles in top form and running well isn't just their business. It's the passion of folks who work there. If baling wire and duct tape is good enough, don't go near them. But if you take pride in your vehicle and reliability is important, go to 2215 Country Club Road in New Bern and let Professional Auto take care of your vehicle. You'll be pleased. That's Professional Auto Service, Country Club Road, New Bern.
Welcome back. Again, thank you for listening to our sponsors and supporters. We're heading off in which direction? We're heading to the ferry, I think.
Yeah, yes, that's a good topic. It was an article in the recent County Compass edition, one of the recent ones, and it had to do with apparently some effort, I guess, in the General Assembly to pass a law that would require that the state ferries here in eastern North Carolina, which is where all the state ferries are as far as I know, that they would be required to charge tolls. And apparently there's a county commissioner, I think it's from Beaufort County, by the name of Kenny Heath, I believe, who wrote an article opposing that. And I thought his rationale was very good. And basically what he was saying is that a lot of the people who use the ferries on a regular basis are workers who use it for commuting. So all of a sudden now they're going to have to start paying a fee. I don't know how much it would be. It doesn't matter. The point is, instead of most of us, like most workers, you get in your car and you can drive to where you're going. You have to pay a toll. But now these people that live in the eastern part of the state are going to have to, and take the ferry, are going to have to start paying a toll. So that's going to be a real burden on a lot of the people who are living in the eastern part of the state. And so his argument was that's just should be free access to locations. You should be able to access your work without paying a penalty for it. That was basically what he was saying.
When Bob Brenson covered it, he said that it would cost more money to collect the toll than the toll.
To implement the process, right, and to collect the tolls.
Right.
That's right. And then I'm going to add, and dealing with Keith Kidwell, Representative Kidwell, he said, if they're going to charge us to cross water, okay, then he's going to ask them to put a toll on every bridge that goes across a river throughout the state.
Well, and this whole business about tolls, you can see how it can really create a problem. Look at up in New York State, for example. You go across those bridges now, that's very expensive. And the only toll road that I know in North Carolina that I've been on is 540. That links between Highway 64, and it links around to the new Interstate 42. And it's about maybe 15-mile connector, and it links or it avoids going through Raleigh, which is understandable. But every time you drive down there, and I've done it several times, a couple of weeks later, I get this letter in the mail with a bill from, the fact that Easy Pay, I think is that what they call it or something.
Easy Pass.
Yeah, and then I get a bill for, $7, $8, whatever it is.
Plus a dollar handling fee, yeah.
Yeah, and every time I use that road. And, once you start down that thing of charging for different roads, how do you pick which roads are going to be called toll roads, which ones aren't? Because anybody that's riding up and down that section, they're paying through the nose for that. I just do it probably maybe once a month, once every 2 months, but it's still I don't like it. So I'm opposed to the tolls.
Well, according to Senator Sanderson, the residents of the Minnesot Beach and Cherry Branch years ago asked for a bridge, and the state told them that a bridge was too expensive, that the state said, we'll give you a ferry, and the ferry will be free forever. I hope somebody got that in writing, and I would like to find that piece of paper.
Senator Brenson also indicated that several of the ferries are very old and needing to be replaced, and that is going to be tremendously expensive, and that was some of the rationale that was used to do the toll, was to pay for new ferries.
Yeah, but here's the thing. We pay enough for gas tax in North Carolina. You go to South Carolina, the tax per gallon for gasoline is substantially lower than North Carolina. So we're collecting enough revenue. I don't know what they're doing to all of it, but they can buy some ferries. They're not that expensive.
I have
I mean, they and if they have to raise the price of gas, the tax on gas, another penny or two, that would certainly cover that. I'd rather see that spread out across the taxpayers than hitting specific people who are going to be really penalized by it.
Well, that's agreed. It's just repeating what was told, not that we agree with it. It was just the information given.
And this is not the first time that the budget has proposed the toll on the ferries, and it's been kiboshed in the past, and hopefully it's kiboshed again. So
there's also toll roads around Charlotte that affected Governor McCrory's re-election, if anybody remembers that road suspectively.
And the tolls were collected and administered by Spain, I think it was.
Yes.
Yes. So we know we're not keeping it within the state. Where else are we going to go?
Did we already talk about the helicopter thing?
The transgenders in the military. Yeah. The Supreme Court has allowed the Trump administration to ban transgenders in the military.
Still, that the commander-in-chief is the commander-in-chief.
It's a stay of the injunction while the thing churns through. So maybe they could flip the other way. Who knows? But for the nonce, transgenders are banned in the military. And Pete Hegseth came out and said, no more pronouns, no more dudes in dresses. We're done with that. Pardon my French, but that's what our Secretary of Defense said. And he was talking in front of an audience of special operators, and they were cheering and yelling, yay. And if you recall, the policy that came out against transgenders for the military said that you could not conduct yourself as a man of honor if you were living a lie, since it was impossible for a man to become a woman, which is straight out the truth, whether transgenders want to hear it or not. It was just amazing to hear it from our government. So for the nonce, the Supreme Court, and I remember years ago the Supreme Court ruled on some other issue with who could be in the military, that you don't have a right to be in the military.
It's a selective service. It really is. Yeah.
And the other thing, Pat, which is related to what you're saying, is the morale issue. I mean, I was in the military 3.5 years. And I went through training, and the people that you bind with, that's critical to the success. You're fighting not only for yourself, you're fighting for your compatriots, your buddies, yourself. So, and to have some weirdo walking around with lipstick on or something like that, that's going to really harm the morale within the units.
Oh, it already does.
Yeah.
I mean, the Navy had drag queens as recruiters. I saw a Navy video on how to use people's pronouns properly, and it just made me sick.
Yeah,
I'm glad that I retired before any of this ever hit the military.
Well, there's also the amount of medical expense to keep the transgender thing going.
Well, one of the judges that was hearing that issue said that the Pentagon spent more money on Viagra than they did for the hormone treatments that the transgenders underwent.
Yeah, which is good. Maybe we'll get more babies being born, which we need.
That argument cuts both ways.
Well, it's still, being transgender goes against everything your body is trying to do, because your body is constantly trying to go back to where it started.
And the other thing, Mary, it goes against the whole concept of manliness. When you're in the service, the service tries to get you to reflect your manliness, to be more manly, to stand up, to be able to tolerate discomfort and pain and all this other
stuff. Show your war face.
Yeah, that's right. And you know, to have some sissy in a dress, you know, it's not going to work.
But historically, if you're looking at the men in the military as well, it was about the fittest. And we have always said that the dysphoria, or whatever the word is, that the mental illness name for the gender identity issues is a mental illness. Do you really want somebody that has a mental illness guarding you?
You want them to have their finger on an atomic weapon? No.
I'm just saying that if somebody is generally saying that they're something that they're not, and from the physiological opinion, it's a mental illness, I think mental illness would disqualify you from the service.
And it should.
And the thing is, you're exactly right, Kim. And the other thing is that the whole issue about the mental stability of these people, the suicide rate amongst transgender individuals is 20 times what it is for people who are following their original gender. So that, again, reflects this idea of their instability. And if somebody can kill themselves, how can you trust them not to take their gun and start shooting the people around them?
Well, look at how many of the school shootings are transgenders.
Right. Yes.
Right. You know, again, having been in the military also, when I signed and went in there, it didn't matter what I thought. I was going to do what they told me to do.
Yeah. Right.
And I was not giving special privileges because I was... Massachusetts. Well, actually, at the time, I was a New Yorker. So,
well, so was I. So, I won't hold that against you.
But the whole idea of safe spaces comes into question as well. When you are in the service, if you get your feelings hurt, you don't get to call a timeout.
Nope, you don't.
No.
Nope.
Look how we deal with people now that are under stress. This incident they had the other day with this helicopter situation, it was in Newark Airport, where they had the air traffic controllers. They lost the radar contact, ability to track by radar. The people who were in that situation, they were given 45 days to recover from the trauma of losing their radar there. Can you believe that? 45 days?
You mean off?
Off.
Off. 45 days to recover, yes.
To recover from the trauma.
The mental trauma.
In an area that was already short-staffed.
Yeah.
Give
me a break.
Well, was that union? Was that a union thing?
I don't think they unionized.
I don't think so.
I think
Reagan did away with the union.
Yeah, he just fired them.
Reagan took care of that.
So, Alan, you wanted to bring up ivermectin, I believe.
Oh, ivermectin. Yeah, this is something that I have a personal kind of experience with. I heard that the against in the House, how far this will go, I don't know. But I believe maybe the Senate, maybe the House. But anyway, they are considering a bill that would make ivermectin into an over-the-counter drug that you do not need a prescription for. Now, ivermectin's been around for a long time, used for a lot of different purposes. And a lot of people found it very helpful when COVID was coming through.
Yes.
And there weren't the side effects that the vaccines have done to people. There's more evidence that the vaccines did more damage than they did protect anybody. And I remember a personal situation when COVID was first emerging. I had read about ivermectin. I went to my personal physician, and I got a prescription. And then 30 days later, when the prescription expired, I went back to get another one. Oh, no, I can't do that anymore. He was prohibited from issuing a prescription, apparently because the practice he was part of had come out and said, no, you can't do that. So again, the independence of the physicians got undermined by the group there.
Just as a last comment, some states have already done ivermectin as over-the-counter.
There's also studies linking ivermectin and another drug. It begins with a B. I cannot recall it, but the combination having positive attributes in curing cancer.
Yes, I saw that.
Folks, we're going to wrap the show up. Again, thank you for listening. Thank you for listening to us. By the way, again, watch for the Back the Blue at the Stanley Hall Ballrooms May 22nd, 6 o'clock, we're going to honor representatives from Craven, Carteret, and Pamlico Sheriff's Offices, and also New Bern and Havelock Police Department. You have a great day.